Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. How does a family deal with a misdiagnosis of breast cancer? We'll find out in today's podcast. Mike Meraz wrote a script, Face the Sun, that deals with this exact topic. It's based on a true story, and it could be anyone's story. It could be your mother's, your sister's, your friend's story. It's a story about hope, courage, and forgiveness, and how to live life to its fullest. And I'll share with you why I think this movie needs to be made. How are you today, Mike?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about your movie, Face the Sun.
Well, follows a young family that's been confronted with a diagnosis of cancer. Woman is young, they have a young family, and she finds a symptom on her own, goes to her family doctor, the doctor's away, the locum that's in for the doctor says, you're too young to get breast cancer, don't worry about the locum?
What is the locum?
Is that not a term you use in the U.S.?
No.
Locum. It's like the substitute teacher for doctors.
Oh, okay. All right.
The locum. Says it's, you know, you're too young. It's your mother's illness. Don't worry about it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the answer she wants, right?
Of course.
We all want. So a few weeks later, the symptoms have not cleared up. In fact, they're starting to get much worse. She goes back, her family doctor has returned, sends her for appropriate testing, discovers, in fact, it is breast cancer. And now she has to, as does her family and her network, confront that diagnosis. And so the story follows how they respond to that.
Wow. Now, is this a personal story for you?
It is. A very close childhood friend of my wife was told at 29 the same thing. Don't worry about it. It's your mother's illness. And she responded the same way. Became pregnant shortly afterwards. And as you know, estrogen is rocket fuel for cancer. And then when she was finally properly diagnosed, of course, she was pregnant and they couldn't treat until it was safe for baby to be delivered. And she went into treatment the next day.
Oh, wow.
So we lost her at 34.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So was she battling the whole time?
Battled the whole time. Battled hard.
Wow.
You know, and it was such an astonishing process to watch. She was so concerned about everyone else.
Right.
You know, it was just so remarkable. And the family and the friends and network rallied just terrifically. As you would expect them to, and I was so blown away by that I needed some way to kind of respond to that, some way to kind of celebrate what I saw, in that journey for them.
Now I know when I was diagnosed at 37, I had found a lump myself, and I'm not sure if you know this story, Mike. I went to family doctor, she sent me to get a biopsy, and the doctor there, after I was diagnosed, he said, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years, and only a hand people have surprised me by their diagnosis, and you are one of them.
Mm.
You know, so I know what you're saying. There's a lot more young people getting diagnosed with breast cancer and other forms of cancer, unfortunately, and I think, you know, this story is the perfect thing for people to see. You have to be your own advocate, you know.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the things that it's not just for young people too.
Right.
I think that
everyone,
you know, regardless, we all need to pay attention to our bodies. We know them better than anyone else.
Exactly.
And if something's not right, we know it. You know, and I think there's a mystique about the medical profession that, you know, encourages us or discourages us, I suppose, from being that advocate. And it's not necessarily because that's how the medical profession wants it. It's simply because of how mysterious it is, you know, their function is.
Right, and I believe that's how it's always been. Like, you know, your mother or father take you to the doctor, and you, oh, well, listen to the doctor, and this is what you should take. But once, I believe, and probably your friend's husband will agree with me, that once something like this happens, I mean, I've been in my doctor's face about stuff where, you know, about just about random things.
Very much so. And in fact, you know, they fought it hard as they could. And in fact, at one point looked for some alternative care as well.
Right.
You know, the medical profession, the mainstream medical profession said, there's nothing else we can do. And their response was, that's not good enough.
Exactly. Because she had children.
She had children. And every day was going to be an important day, a precious day, you know. And she was going to make sure she hung on to them all. So, you know, we try and pay tribute to that as best we can as well, you know. And you're right about the patients getting younger and younger. I mean, the youngest, I'm in British Columbia, Canada, and the youngest patient that we've had here was 18.
Right, and there's actually a girl, I'm not sure where in the state she's from, but she's 10 and diagnosed with breast cancer.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
So the movie, you've only written it. You haven't started filming or shooting, as my friend would say. Now, why is that?
Well, we wanted to make sure that what we were doing was contributing to cancer organizations, not detracting from it.
Right.
So we made a firm commitment at the beginning not to take money out of the existing resource pool and to raise the money entirely privately from people who normally invest in, you know, used car lots and ski lodges.
Right.
You know, people who wouldn't get within a country mile of charity work as an investment. But in order to do that, we needed to first prove to them that there's a market for a film that doesn't have any aliens, where nothing explodes, where cars don't go fast, and the hero dies at the end.
Right.
You know? I mean, who's going to go see that movie?
Well, that's life. I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So we started with the idea that we'll prove that we've got a market. We set up a website. And
which is what? What's your website?
Oh, it's www.facethesunmovie.com.
All right.
And we've really been working it hard to get as much traffic as we can to that website, getting people logging in, looking at what we're doing, interacting with it as much as they can, and so we can go to the investors and say, look, here's proof. Here's proof that there's a market for it, a loyal market for it. We've done really well. I mean, as of today, in about 9.5, almost 10 months worth of active website traffic, we've got 355,000 hits on it.
Oh, excellent.
Worldwide. And it's really, really gratifying, really humbling to have that. But it's not yet at the tipping point
right.
for investors. So, you know, continue to do it. It's a $2.5 million project.
Oh, wow.
And we have raised the money once and then lost a portion of it and had to stop production. We were 6 weeks from camera.
Which, you know, $2.5 million sounds like a lot, but I worked in television production in Los Angeles for about 10 years, and that's about $1 million is what costs one episode.
Oh, yeah.
Of television, you know, just for people who are not in the know. So $2 million
very small.
Really is a drop in the bucket. And I know a lot of, you know, because you want it, obviously you're going to shoot on 35 millimeter, I assume, or high def.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, that debate was raging at the time we lost a bit of the funding, was do we shoot on HD or do we shoot on film? And our cinematographer said, you know what, it's getting so close, you can hardly tell the difference anymore. So,
right, and most shows now, or at least when I worked, they shot on film and transferred to high def.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pretty much air it anywhere. Most of the TVs now, I'm not sure about in Canada, but in the United States, are becoming high def anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there'll be places where, you know, we'd have to transfer for sure.
Right. Right. So do you have everybody in place and all you need is your funding? You have all your actors cast?
Well, it's a question now of availability.
Right.
I mean, we had certainly a very strong cast, you know, previously. But now we have to make sure that they're available. Some of them will be, some of them won't be.
Right.
But it was a real delight to start putting the creative team together. Because of the cause, because of the fact that we're targeting the revenue at cancer organizations, people were really quick to get on board.
Right.
They understood the need for an educational vehicle like this, and they wanted to do something. I mean, you know, the reality is, you know, is that one in four families are going to be touched by some form of cancer.
Exactly, and unfortunately, not everybody survives.
Indeed, yeah. And so, I mean, there wasn't anybody we talked to that didn't know somebody, you know, who had cancer or had a close friend who had passed of cancer. And they very much wanted to be involved. So putting the team together was remarkably easy.
It's just getting the funding, because like we were saying before, people always like to see the final product before, you know.
Absolutely. Oh. It's a real chicken and egg kind of question here, you know, our catch-22. You know, people are happy to support you if you've got something to show them.
Right.
You know. But, you know, to get in, because of the parameters we put on it at the beginning, not wanting to take away from the existing cancer movement and the work that's already being done and is already grossly underfunded.
Right.
You know, it's been a bit harder to go elsewhere to get the money and so on. Prove you have a market, and then we can talk about whether or not we can finance you.
And that really surprises me, because especially with the Livestrong organization, and, you know, these are the groups that I know, Livestrong and Stupid Cancer and Susan G. Komen, you would think that people who are involved with these organizations, not necessarily the organizations themselves, would want this movie made, because it is, you know, this is a perfect movie, what I always talk about, being proactive about your health. Mm-hmm. You know, even though they say, oh, it's just a water cyst. I mean, I have a friend right now whose friend has, like, had multiple scans, and it's like, I told him, it's like, you need to, like, tell them that you want a biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say no, then guess what? Find another doctor.
Keep going. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those organizations, you know, I've talked to lots and lots of people both here in Canada and across the United States, all over Europe.
Right.
And the organizations are, for the most part, as supportive as they can be.
Of course.
I think there is an element of skepticism within the cancer community. I think it is the kind of charity work that sometimes people get involved with for their own purposes rather
right.
than for the cause itself. And I understand why organizations would be initially hesitant, would want us to prove to them that we're in this for the right reasons before they jump on board wholeheartedly. Some have been fabulous. I mean, some have really gone way, way out of their way to help us out. Living Beyond Breast Cancer has been great.
Very nice. I like that organization.
Yeah, Gilda's Clubs have been fabulous. I can't say enough about them, you know. Young Adult Cancer Canada has been outstanding for us here. And Maggie's Cancer Care Centers in Great Britain has been first rate, you know. Lots and lots of little groups here and there have just been superb. So
right.
Been so kind and so generous, and it's really been a pleasure to talk to cancer groups, you know. And the other thing that's been just so remarkable and so humbling, you know, for me personally, is talking to folks like you, people with firsthand direct experience with breast cancer.
Right.
And it's just been so wonderful to listen to their stories and to connect with them about what we're doing and why we're doing it. Really, really humbling, life-changing.
Right, and I was one of those people who had kind of a cursory. I had a friend who passed away from cancer when I back when I lived in L.A., but I thought, oh, well, he's older, so he had pancreatic cancer. So I didn't know, you know, at the time that cancer can really strike somebody who's, you know, even 25. I was at an American Cancer Society rally, and somebody said, oh, yeah, my friend who's 25 was just diagnosed with breast cancer. And, you know, I'm hoping it's not an alarming trend where people are getting younger and younger.
Well, there's lots of research being done about environmental factors.
Right.
You know, what are we doing to ourselves through dietary habits, through what we're putting into the environment, you know, that's causing it. I mean, I you know, smarter people than me will answer what.
That's what, true, and me too.
What it is, you know, but certainly it is a trend, and it's very alarming. And it's one of the things that we want to address, both within the context of the feature film,
right,
but also within the educational component that goes with the home release as well.
Right.
There'll be a separate DVD that'll be included with all kinds of educational things on it, from support group discussions about, you know, relationships after breast cancer, to self-exams, to, you know, whatever we think and whatever the community thinks is best to include in something like that. So
right.
We're really anxious to make sure that we do whatever we can with this to spread the word and make sure people are aware.
Now, how supportive has the family been, your friend's family?
Oh, fabulous. They've really been fabulous. Very private family.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there are days that that I suspect Diane herself would be horrified at the fuss being made. You know, that just is not...
Right, oh, I know.
Oh, you know. But they've been thrilled, and it was a real honor for me to be able to write the script. And it's not, you know, it's not her story as such. It's a story.
Right.
You know.
Because it could be anybody, really. I mean, reading about it on your website, it could pretty much be anybody that I know or anybody that you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I get, you know, every so often I get a very emphatic email from someone saying, how did you know my story? Or how did you know my daughter's story, my wife's story? That's her. That's exactly what happened. How
really?
Did you know that?
Now, I think we were talking before the podcast about some of the problems you've had with financing is some people, the misdiagnosis. Mm-hmm. So people are kind of concerned about how that's going to be handled.
Yeah, and I do my best to make sure that people understand that the story is not about the misdiagnosis at
right,
all.
Right, it's not about Dr. X who made the mistake.
No, not at all. You know what? It's a fool's game to say if they'd gotten it right the first time she'd be here or he'd
right.
be here.
Right, exactly.
We don't know that. We really don't know that. The reality is that mistakes are made in every profession.
Right.
I'm a high school teacher. I make mistakes every day. Father of four daughters. God help me, I make mistakes.
Well, they'll be first to tell you that, won't they?
Every single day. So, but my mistakes are not as high profile as someone in the medical profession. They're making life and death decisions, every single decision they make sometimes.
Right.
You know, this is about how does a family respond to that diagnosis? You know, how does it impact the children and the partner, the best friend, the parents? How does it affect that network? How do they learn the new relationship that results from the diagnosis?
Right, because everything changes.
Everything changes.
As a friend of mine who wrote a book, everything. There's nothing. I've often thought, because like I said, I was diagnosed here in Michigan, and I thought, well, if I go visit my friends back in California, am I going to be very different from what I was before?
Yeah, and one of the things too, and we look at it a little bit, some of the folks going through treatment now talk about the fact that that they find themselves periodically being the comforters,
right?
Which is not something they anticipated, you know. And so we look at that within the context of the film, and we also too, I think there is, you know, the line about everything changes, I think is, there's an element of a gift there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, some aspects of it, things change for the better in a very strange way that no one can anticipate given the horrible nature of the illness.
Exactly.
But life is more precious. It's more real, it's more honest, and I think we're more present.
I agree, because I would say that if I didn't have cancer, well, one, I wouldn't be doing this podcast, but I I don't take life for granted. I don't take my fiance for granted anymore. And, you know, looking back while I was in treatment, I was like, wow, you know, I used to just go out and do stuff and be like, all right, I'll see you later. And now it's more like, okay, well, what can we do together?
Yeah.
You know, what, you know, and if I have a friend who needs something or needs information as far as cancer goes, I will give them the information that I have. I mean, obviously I'm not a doctor, but, you know, it seems like once you're diagnosed, people want your opinion as a patient. And to get that information, and I am more than happy to give that information, you know.
Yeah.
But I always tell people they need to talk to their doctor or healthcare professional before, you know.
Yeah.
Not a radio.
And you know what? And it's little things too. You know. I have an 8-year-old and 13-year-old daughter who wanted an allowance.
Mm-hmm.
My rule is, no, you get money in a house for things you do that are extra, but
right.
You know, there are chores that we all do together because they're part of the family, so I'm not paying you to do your job,
right?
But I'll get a paper route with you. Well, I can't imagine anything worse, or I couldn't have imagined anything worse than a paper route on Vancouver Island in January. Where, I mean, it rains. It's the Pacific Northwest. It rains constantly, you know? Previous to this, I wouldn't have heard of it.
Right.
Now it's like, yeah, this is cool, right? Because it's time shared.
Exactly.
You know, we're out Halloween. We're out in our Halloween costumes delivering papers in the neighborhood because it's fun, right?
Exactly.
And it's those moments, I think, too, that escape us in the crush of the to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
We lose track of what's really, really important. And I think that that's also the central message of the story. I don't, you know, I mean, the story is about a family and cancer.
Right.
But it's also not, you know. It's also bigger than that, if that's possible.
Well, yes, it is. I mean, it seems like when you're in cancer, it seems like it can envelop your whole world and there's nothing else. But, I mean, there is really, it is a life changer and it changes your perspective for sure. And I would find, and I'm sure your friend did, that nobody really wanted, like, if they wanted to vent, they didn't want to call me because they think that I would one-up them. Like,
yeah.
Oh, well, your car broke down while I have cancer. I mean, really?
Yeah.
Who would say that? Not
like
me.
It's a contest.
Right, exactly. I mean, even some relatives of mine would call me up. They're like, well, I didn't want to bother you. I'm like, I'm not going to compare myself. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to hear people's little, you know, day-to-day mundane problems because it was just something to get away from.
You bet.
Everything, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know exactly. I know what you mean. And you know, I really want this film made because it is a testament to, I would say, what a family is going through, and to be proactive about your health.
Absolutely. And you know, I was shocked when we started doing the research for the project too, that there aren't any films where that's the focus.
Really?
There aren't. You know. People get cancer in films, absolutely, but
right.
They tend to get it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some other conflict going on, and as though that's not bad enough, now someone has cancer, and the movie's over, you know.
Right.
And we don't see that kind of family interaction. Holy cow, now what do I do?
Right, or it's the Hollywood thing where it's all, you know. As I told my my boss, I said, you know, cancer is not always sunshine and puppies.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, there's a reality there.
In fact, there are very few puppies. It'd be better if there were more puppies.
It would be better if there were more puppies. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, that's the point of this podcast and this show is, you know, I like to find the positive in everything. In the inspiration, and I believe that your movie should be made because, yes, she, you know, she did have cancer, and unfortunately, she passed away. But that's reality. But how her family dealt with the whole thing—I mean, that's inspirational—and how she did, like you said, she would care more about other people during her time. And I think that, you know, obviously, I can't speak for all cancer survivors, but you know, I kind of feel that way. I felt that way too sometimes, where it's just like, you know, having a kind of a crappy day and feeling all tired, and someone else would be upset, and all of a sudden it's like, well, what can I do to help? And they'd be thinking, well, you're going through treatment. What?
Yeah. And you know, it's an odd kind of relationship that's created. You know.
Yes.
But you know, you've had these great purposeful, caring relationships with people that are fundamentally different as a result of that one word, you know.
Right.
And they needn't be. They needn't be. You are still the same person, caring about the same things, passionate about their well-being as well, you know.
Right.
As you say, it's not a question of one-upmanship at all.
No.
You know, two neighborhood women hanging over the fence complaining about their husbands.
Oh, I like I said, I relished like when people would call me and they were actually like, I told you, oh, I didn't want to say anything because you have cancer. I'm like, well, it's not going to change the fact that, you know, I think your boyfriend's an idiot or, you know, you still
what need are you to, thinking?
Right. You still need to get your groceries or whatever. You know, I'm still that's the thing that other people kind of forget when you have, you know, cancer or some kind of disease that you're still you.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the disease.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. You know, I would just blog about that. It's like, I'm still Mel. I'm still here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going through something that I don't want anyone else to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm believing that that's, you know, the focus of the movie as well. She's still a mom and she's still a wife.
Yeah.
She's
still a great friend and
exactly.
a passionate neighbor and cares about her community and her family very passionately. And she's got this additional thing that she's dealing with, but she's still who she is, right to her core and right to the end.
Exactly. Now, if people want to get a hold of you for funding, which I'm hoping they will, where can they get a hold of you?
Probably the best place is on the website. There is an email address on the website that they can contact me with. We're going to make sure that the vast majority of the funding, other than what the investors take as a return.
Right.
And we're going to limit that. Everything else is going directly to cancer organizations. And it'll be doled out geographically.
Nice.
So, you know, in your state, the percentage, you know, that would stay in the state would be, you know, based on how many people went to see the movie in the state.
Oh, interesting.
You know, so the money that's raised in the state stays in the state.
That's excellent. That's a great idea.
Well, I mean, it's the fairest way to do it, right?
You know? Right. Right. And your website again?
Is www.facethesunmovie.com.
Excellent.
Visit early, visit often.
Click away right now.
That's right. Make it your homepage.
There you go. Wow, you sound like a salesman.
Oh, I'm really sorry.
That's fine. I'm only kidding. Well, awesome, Mike. Thank you for joining. I'm going to wrap up right now. This is The Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am at Attic Mel Majoros, or find the fan page of The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com. Find me on Twitter at Mel Majoros, my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.